Hello, welcome back to Listening with Chris. Today we're going to be reading a little bit of The Iliad by Homer. I really like this story. It's very descriptive. Homer's very descriptive in the wording that he uses. Like at one point, he talks about a man dying, and as he dies, his head droops like a poppy in the rain. It's just very descriptive language. I'll be reading probably about 3 chapters, maybe 4 chapters today. So, without further ado, let's cut to a sponsor, and then I will get reading. Chapter 1, The Golden Apple. It all began with an apple, a golden apple, engraved with dangerous words, for the most beautiful. 3 goddesses tried to claim it, but which of them was really the most beautiful? Was it Hera, the wife of Zeus, king of the gods, or Athena, the goddess of wisdom, or Aphrodite, the goddess of love? To settle the argument, the 3 goddesses left their home on high Olympus and went to find Paris, prince of Troy, the most handsome man in the world. They found him on Mount Ida, where they appeared in front of him in all their loveliness. "Who should have this apple?" they said. "Choose one of us." Paris was dazzled and terrified, but the 3 goddesses were determined to have an answer. They began to offer him bribes. "Choose me," said Hera. "I will give you power and make you a great ruler." "Choose me," said Athena. "I will ensure that you win all your battles and become a famous warrior." Aphrodite smiled silkily. "Choose me," she murmured, "and you shall have the most beautiful woman in the world for your wife." Aphrodite's bribe was the one that delighted Paris, but it cast a long, deadly shadow. The most beautiful woman in the world was Helen of Sparta, and she was already married to Sparta's king Menelaus. Aphrodite knew that, but she promised Helen to Paris, and he stretched out his hands and gave her the apple. The quarrel that began on Olympus boiled over into the human world. With Aphrodite's help, Paris set out to steal the king of Sparta's wife. He was already handsome, but she made him irresistible. Dazzled and entranced, Helen left her husband, and she and Paris went off to Troy together. The ship full of Spartan treasure. Menelaus was enraged, so was his brother Agamemnon, high king over all the Greeks. The 2 brothers called on the other kings of Greece to help them fetch Helen back. The quarrel that started with an apple spread wider and wider. In every part of Greece, kings gathered their armies. Fleets of long ships set sail for Troy, carrying heroes with names that will live forever. Quick-witted Odysseus from Ithaca. Wise old Nestor, king of Pylos. Valiant Diomedes from Argos. And noble Ajax, who ruled Salamis. Mightiest of all was Achilles, the great runner, son of the sea nymph Thetis. His bronze armor gleamed as he led his fierce Myrmidon troops onto the ships. The Greeks attacked as soon as they landed on the Trojan coast, but Troy was not an easy city to conquer. It was protected by rivers on both sides and surrounded by strong, high walls, and King Priam, Paris's father, refused to hand Helen back. Instead, he called on his allies to help him defend the city. He had 50 sons, every one of them ready to fight for Helen and her treasure. They were all brave men, but the bravest of all, and the noblest warrior, was Prince Hector, tamer of horses. The Greeks could not fight their way into Troy, but they refused to leave without Helen, pulling their ships along to the beach. They built huts on the shore, and settled down to lay siege to the city. No one guessed how long it would take. 9 years later, they were still there, living on the same cramped huts. They were still fighting battles on the plain in front of Troy, still trying to breach the city walls. They would not give up and abandon the war, but all of them longed for the homes they'd left behind in Greece. No wonder they began to quarrel among themselves. I will get right back to reading the Iliad right after the sponsored segment. I hope you guys enjoy. Chapter 2, The Quarrel. Like the quarrel that started the war in the first place, this quarrel was about a woman. The Greeks had captured several Trojans, and Agamemnon had seized a beautiful girl named Chryseis. Her father was a priest of the god Apollo, and he wanted his daughter back. He came to the Greek ships with a cart full of treasure, determined to ransom her. But Agamemnon refused to take the treasure. He treated the old man rudely and sent him away. Apollo was furious at the insult to his priest. He swooped down on the Greek ships with arrows carrying plague. Day and night, for 9 days, he shot the arrows at the mules and dogs and men. The whole Greek camp was devastated by disease and death. Achilles realized why the plague had hit them. "It's your fault," he said to Agamemnon. "Let the old priest take his daughter back. Otherwise, we'll have to go back home." Agamemnon flew into a rage. "You've taken captives too. Why should I have to give up mine? Will you hang on to yours? If I have to send Chryseis back, I want another woman instead. You can give me one of yours. I'll take Briseis." "Why should I suffer?" Achilles shouted. "My men and I deserve some reward for fighting your war, and if you're going to take everything away, we might as well go home. We have no quarrel with the Trojans." "I am your king," thundered Agamemnon. "You have sworn to obey my orders."
That was true, but Achilles refused to back down. Storming off to his hut, he ordered all his men to withdraw from the fighting. Agamemnon knew there was only one way to end the plague. He had to give up the old priest's daughter. But he was in command of the Greek army, and he could not allow Achilles to defy him. So he sent Chryseis back to her father. He dispatched two of his soldiers to Achilles' hut to fetch Briseis. Briseis did not want to go with him. When she came out of the hut, she was crying bitterly, but Agamemnon's orders had to be obeyed. The soldiers hustled her away, but Achilles was left alone, staring out to sea. He wept with rage and humiliation. "How can Zeus treat me like this?" he shouted across the water. "Doesn't he care about me?" Deep in the ocean, his mother Thetis heard him. She came floating up through the clear blue water and drifted onto the beach. "Why so sad?" she said, stroking her son with a hand as delicate as mist. Achilles told her bitterly. He was furious, and he wanted revenge. Whatever it cost other people. "I want to see the Greek army on the run," he said. "Go plead with Zeus to help the Trojans. When the Greek army is penned along these ships, when these soldiers are being slaughtered, maybe Agamemnon will realize how stupid he was to lose me and my myrmidons." Thetis gazed at him with her eyes full of tears. She knew he was fated to die young. How could she refuse him anything when he had such a short time to live? "I'll go straight to Zeus," she said. Leaving Achilles on the shore, she flew to Mount Olympus, where the gods watch over the human world. She flung herself at Zeus's feet and clasped his knees. "Almighty Father," she said. "You know my dear son Achilles is doomed to die young. Now Agamemnon has robbed and insulted him. Give Achilles his revenge. Let the Trojans win every battle until justice is done." Zeus looked down at her and sighed. The gods were divided over the war in Troy, and Hera, his wife, was a fierce supporter of the Greeks. But Thetis was looking up at him with tears in her lovely eyes, and he could not resist her grief. Reluctantly, he nodded. "I will do it," he said. First, Zeus sent Agamemnon a false dream to deceive him. In the dream, Agamemnon saw himself talking to old Nestor, wisest of the Greek kings. "Get up, Agamemnon," said the dream Nestor. "Now is the time to lead your armies out. If you attack now, you will defeat the Trojans and bring down the walls of Troy. Remember this." Agamemnon woke and sat up, shaken by his vivid dream. Calling the other kings together, he told them to prepare for battle. "I have a message from Zeus," he said. "We shall win this fight." All along the seashore, men began polishing their armor and harnessing the horses' chariots. Bronze glittered in the sunlight, and the earth shook with the thunder of horses' feet as the Greeks prepared to attack. But everything was quiet and still around Achilles' ships. Achilles was sulking inside his hut, refusing to forget his quarrel with Agamemnon, and the Myrmidons were strolling around idly, watching their horses graze. None of them would be a part of this battle. From inside the city, the Trojans saw what the Greeks were doing. At once, they prepared to meet them. They marched out through the city, through the Scaean Gate, and formed lines on a mountain called Thornhill. But they weren't looking forward to the fight. And there was still a chance of avoiding a full-scale battle. As the Greek army approached, Paris stepped out of the Trojan lines. He was dressed in a panther skin, with a bow in his hand. "Is any Greek brave enough to meet me in single combat?" he shouted. "If we settle the lives like that, if we settle the war like that, hundreds of lives will be saved." Menelaus leaped forward. instantly hungry for the fight. He was eager to kill Paris and win back his wife. Glaring furiously at the Trojans, he began to buckle on his armor inside Troy. Inside Troy, King Priam and his counselors were sitting on the city wall, high above the Scaean Gate. They didn't hear what Paris said, but they saw what was happening, and they leaned together, muttering anxiously. As they were talking, Helen came out to walk along the parapets. She was weeping at the sight of the two armies drawn up for battle, and her tears made her lovelier than ever. "How beautiful she is," the old men whispered to another. "But oh, if only she had never come to Troy." King Priam beckoned her over. "Tell me," he said, "which of these Greek heroes is Agamemnon? Where are Menelaus and Odysseus, Ajax and Diomedes, and which one is Achilles?" Helen looked down from the wall. "Achilles isn't there," she said, "but the tall, handsome man is Agamemnon. And the others?" She pointed them out one by one. The sound of their names made her ache with longing for her lost home in Sparta, but it was too late to undo what had happened. However, sad she was, she could not end the war. Down below, Paris and Menelaus were facing each other with their weapons in their hands. But watching over the scene, the goddess Aphrodite had no intention of letting them fight. She knew that Menelaus was faster and stronger, and she did not want to see Paris killed. As Menelaus attacked, she stood beside Paris, ready to protect him. Menelaus grabbed at Paris's helmet, dragging him off his feet and throttling him with his helmet strap. Quickly, Aphrodite broke the strap and sent Menelaus staggering backward. Then she wrapped Paris in a thick mist and snatched him away from the battlefield. She whisked him into the city and laid him down on his own soft, scented bed. Menelaus was still trying to fight, but when he threw his spear into the mist, it clattered to the ground without hitting anything. Then the mist cleared, and Paris had vanished. Menelaus knew that one of the gods had interfered. Now there was no chance to stop the battle. The Greek chariot surged forward like a great wave of the sea, and the two armies clashed head-on with spears and swords and arrows. The killing began. Chapter 3. Inside the Walls of Troy. The Greeks were bitterly aware that Achilles was missing, but they fought like lions. Diomedes fell on the Trojans like a whirlwind, and the goddess Athena went with him, turning the enemy's spears away from his chariot. It looked as though the Trojans would be forced back into the city. But Hector wasn't ready to be defeated. He leaped down from his chariot and ran across the Trojan line, shouting encouragement. "Be brave, my friends. Hold on your positions. I'll go into the city and offer a sacrifice to the gods. We will not be beaten." The Trojans were inspired by his speech. They began to fight even more ferociously, leaving his cousin Aeneas in charge of the army. Hector strode through the gate and into the city. As he entered his father's palace, he met his mother, Queen Hecuba. She caught hold of his hand, amazed to see him there in the middle of a battle. "What's happening?" she cried. "Have the Greeks reached our city walls? You must be exhausted. Let me fetch you a cup of wine."
"There's no time for drinking," Hector said. "We must win Athena over to our side. Take your most beautiful, precious robe to her temple and offer it on the altar. Promise her a splendid sacrifice if she will only save our quaint city. Quickly."
Hecuba hurried off to do as he asked, and Hector went to look for his brother Paris. He caused all this bloodshed as he thought angrily. How dare he sulk inside the city like a coward? He burst into the splendid palace that Paris had built for himself, marching through one room after another, ignoring the servants. Finally, he found Paris in the bedroom, polishing his beautiful armor. Helen sat beside him, doing embroidery.
"Why are you here?" Hector shouted furiously. "All of the other Trojan warriors are risking death to keep the Trojans to keep the Greeks out of Troy. You should be ashamed."
"I know," Paris said smoothly, "but I was mortified at being snatched away from my fight with Menelaus. I've been too embarrassed to return to the battle, but Helen keeps telling me I should. I'll come with you if you wait while I strap on my armor."
Helen joined in hastily, trying to calm Hector's rage. "Forgive us both. We know that this war is our fault. Sit down for a moment while Paris gets ready."
"You're very kind," Hector said coldly, "but I haven't got time to sit and chatter. I'm going home to see my wife and son in case I don't survive this battle."
He hurried away, leaving Paris and Helen in the bedroom. But when he reached his own house, Andromache, his wife, wasn't there. She heard the battle was going badly, said one of her ladies, so she ran up to see what was happening, and the nurse went after her, carrying baby Astyanax. Hector rushed off to find Andromache. As he reached the Scaean Gate, she came out running towards him with a nursemaid behind her, carrying Astyanax, Hector's darling son. Andromache burst into tears and caught hold of her husband's hand.
"What will I do if you're killed?" she cried. "You're all I have. Don't make me a widow and leave our son an orphan. Stay inside the city and rally your troops from the top of the great tower."
"I can't hide in here like a coward," Hector said gently. "I must do everything I can to keep the Dreeks out of Troy. If they win, they'll sack the city and carry you off as slaves. May the earth lie deep over my dead body before that happens."
He reached out to take his son, but Astyanax had never seen his father in full armor, and Hector's huge helmet terrified him. He cowered away from its quivering horsehair plume. Hector and Andromache laughed tenderly. Hector lifted off his helmet and put it on the ground. Then he took Astyanax in his arms and gave him a kiss.
"May Zeus make you strong and brave," he said. He whispered,
"so that men say he's a better man than his father. May you triumph in battle and make your mother happy."
He handed the baby to Andromache, and she smiled at him through her tears.
Deeply moved, Hector stroked her face, trying not to grieve. He said, "We can't escape the fate that is fixed for us. Go home and keep our households running smoothly. That is your work, and you do it well. My work is to fight for our fair city. I must go back to the battle." He put on his helmet and strapped it up.
Andromache started home with Astyanax in her arms, but she bitterly kept looking back over her shoulder, weeping bitterly. She had a terrible feeling that she would never see him alive again. As Hector turned toward the gate, Paris, full of life and vigor, came hurrying down to join him. His armor gleamed in the sun, and he was laughing.
"I'm sorry I kept you waiting," he said. "I know you're eager to get back to the fight."
"I was only trying to protect your reputation," Hector said gravely. "You're the only one who plunged us into this war, and I don't want to hear the other Trojans calling you a coward. Even if I'm doing you an injustice, I'll make amends when the war is over.
If Zeus lets us win."
Without waiting for a reply, he turned away and walked through the gate back into the battle.
Well, those were the first three chapters of The Iliad by Homer, written by Gillian Cross. I'm gonna be honest, the pictures aren't my favorite, but the book is absolutely phenomenal. I'll probably be coming out with a new set of chapters, probably three or four more, in a couple days. Maybe tomorrow, I don't know, but I'll do my best to keep up with it. Anyway, I hope everybody has a great day or night or evening or morning, whatever time you're listening to this at, if you're even listening to this at all. Have a great day. Bye.